Welcome to Journeys of Romance. I'm your host, Jess Michaels. Today's guests are huge supporters of our industry. They recently, not that recently now, it's a whole year, opened a romance bookstore outside of Chicago, Illinois in June of 2019. Please welcome Roseanne and Marissa Backlund, the proprietors of Love Sweet Arrow.
Hi.
Hello.
Since there's three of us, it will be interesting to see how we manage to like juggle all talking at once. I will try not to crosstalk you too much. But thank you guys so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you so much. This is fun.
When you guys opened, I know that we kind of talked and touched base when you were sort of in the process of opening, and I've been so excited about it because I used to live in like central Illinois, and so this would have been my romance bookstore before I moved away. Now I feel a pang of like longing for it. So were you both always big readers?
Yes, absolutely. I used to sneak her romance novels at a young age. And and then when I was more open about it, then we shared. So that was fun.
Yes.
I've always read
Roseanne, did you know? Well, because like a lot of romance authors and a lot of readers talk about like kind of stealing mom's romance novels. But since Roseanne, you're here, like, did you know that she was doing this or were you unaware until she brought it up?
I caught her. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then we just had a talk about, you know, how old you are and what's appropriate. And then.
Because I was 12 at the time. Like 11,
right.
12.
So I mean, kind of on that borderline of like, oh, this might be a lot for you.
Yeah.
But my mom never, like my mom read romance and she never restricted me. So I just as long as we had a talk and we were on the same page. And then I think we kind of geared you more towards the young adult ones for a while, didn't we, Marissa?
Yeah. And I was super into the Avon True Romance for Teens.
Yeah.
I had like almost every single one, and I had both of Beverly Jenkins's, which had beautiful covers. And I know she's re-released them, but I'm really hoping once I like go through all of my books that are still in mom's basement that I'll find my copy of Belle and the Beau, because I loved that book so much.
It was interesting when they did that. That was back, I think I was writing for Avon at the time, although I certainly was not going to be the one writing YA. Like, I don't think I would have done well with that. But, I mean, it was interesting when they did that because they were tapping into romance, I felt like, just as an outsider kind of looking in a different way than some YA was. Like, they were really following that tropes, but just kind of making it more accessible to a YA audience. Is that how you kind of felt when you're reading them, that you were sort of getting that especially historical romance fix, but also kind of?
Yeah, I mean, it really had the same kind of setup that a traditional romance does. You know, they meet, there's like whether they're friends or they're enemies, or there's like a some kind of secret that they're keeping, and then they would fall in love, there'd be that big moment, and then they would end up together. Yeah, I definitely felt like, I mean, it really was the plot of an adult romance made for teens.
And not, like made specifically for teens, which I think, I mean, obviously YA is YA and it's made for teens, but there's such a huge adult audience for it now. I'm sure that both of you see that probably in the bookstore a little bit. You know, I mean, there's so many adult people reading YA, and then it's so sad when they, you know, when I see reviews and sometimes they're like, well, it was a little juvenile. It's like, well, it was meant for a 14-year-old. Like,
yeah,
don't step into a space that you don't belong in and then say that you don't like the space that you took over.
Or they acted like teenagers while they're 15 in the story. So they're going to act like teenagers and they're going to, you know, be petty or, you know, be immature.
Yeah. I mean, you're telling the story for an audience of someone that they're going to see a representation of them in that story because they're 15 or 16 or 17. And just the concept that you would want that to speak to you as an adult with so much more experience. It's just, I don't understand it. Like, I mean, it's awesome. I mean, I've definitely read YA that I've really enjoyed, but I've never thought that it was meant for me. I mean, I just get to enjoy it as a side benefit kind of.
And for me, I always read what she read too. I mean, like we were sharing, even though it was YA. And now, even with my boys, who are not boys anymore, whatever they were reading as young adults and teenagers and even littler, I always read the book too. So I kind of always had my pulse on what they were reading. Not that I told them they couldn't read it, but then they had someone to talk to about it, which was nice. So.
Well, and you also know if an issue is going to come up because, like you said, I mean, you were talking about not being restricted when you were reading your mom's romance, and Marissa obviously reading some romance. You were reading some romance that was maybe kind of above your I was going to say your pay grade, but your age grade. You know, I mean, and again, that's so common in so many romance authors and so many romance readers. You know, it's kind of reading above. But as a mom, I would think like there's some. It's good to kind of be aware of what someone is reading so that if there's an issue in it, you can say, hey, you know, let's talk about this so that you either don't think that this is, you know, okay or that you feel comfortable with what you've read. Although I'm sure as a kid, that's really fun to have that conversation.
Well, I remember like that moment, and I remember like blurting out, I was just reading the funeral scene, and I remember mom being like, how do you know there's anything other than like, how do you know you're not supposed to be reading something or other, or just you're uncomfortable even expressing it to me? Maybe you shouldn't be reading this book. If
Right. Maybe you're not ready.
if you're not ready to talk about it, let's dial it back a little bit.
That's
So,
true.
did you, how, so you, Roseanne, you discovered the romance genre from your mom. Marissa, you discovered it from your mom. I really, I feel like how did she discover? We'll just keep going. Mom to mom to mom. It's like in 1872, we found the genesis. But it is, I mean, there is something really warm about the idea of that romance is a genre that gets passed from, you know, parent to child, and that is part of the joy of it is that it's something that gives comfort, like from generation to generation. That hasn't changed, no matter how many generations you go back, as long as you go back into where there's kind of this iteration of what the romance genre looks like, that happily ever after is a comfort to so many people, and that crosses generationally.
Well, and I remember when my cousin, who is now 11, yeah, she's 11 now, almost 12. And when she was born, my aunt made me her godmother. And I remember like going to visit her as a toddler, and my aunt and I were talking, and she's like, I always read, and I always read a romance and all different kinds of things. And she's like, I want to make sure she's a reader so that no matter what. And I remember us discussing like romance. And she's like, that's something I've always read. And I hope to be able to share that with her.
Well, it's such a great gateway into just reading in general, getting pleasure out of reading in general, because I think there is it is such a hopeful genre that like it's not a scary genre to access. Would you agree with that?
Oh, I would, for sure. And if you're going to
Just
read for
knowing that you're going to
pleasure,
get that good feeling.
absolutely. And that's kind of what reading for pleasure is. Just when you close the book, then you're like, oh, that was nice. I want to reread it now.
Well, I always get excited when when a book that I love or an author that I love that someone else is, especially on Twitter, you know, saying, "Oh, well, I just discovered like Melissa Blue," and I'm like, "Oh my God, you're so lucky! You have all these wonderful books to read. You've never read them, and this is so exciting! Like, I almost want to cry. I'm like, you're on new territory. I'm so thrilled for you." Like, it's because it's also such a sharing genre in that we're all so excited when someone finds something that we like. Like, oh my God, I have to talk to you about that when you're done reading it.
Well, and my sister-in-law, my brother's wife, my older brother's wife, she's always loved romance, but she got a lot of like shame from her library, and so she like loves that we have the store, and so whenever she comes up, she'll like buy like a whole giant stack of books, and both of us have gotten texts from her like, I just finished this. Oh my gosh, I was up all night.
I have to talk to someone about it.
Yes. Yeah, every time she
Well,
gets
and I mean,
a book
go
from
ahead.
us. So like for her birthday, we give her a gift card to the store, or we pick out books kind of because we know what she likes and we send them to her. So
Yeah.
she's always text the Treadway, I got a book bag. So it's fun.
But again, I mean, that's like, I think that's the real beauty of it. And I mean, you mentioned that she has some like shame from her library. And I think that's the thing that frustrates me so much about, you know, that kind of attitude that outsiders sometimes have toward the genre is that there is like a shame that somehow reading a book that has a hopeful ending or reading a story that, you know, maybe more female centered or, you know, is something that we shouldn't do somehow that isn't important.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean I think that's again because it is a genre that makes people access reading, it makes people access loving books. The concept that anyone would shame someone for that is so confusing to me.
Agreed. And it's just frustrating when like just as like formulaic other genres that are just as formulaic like don't get that like, well, we already knew what was going to happen. They don't get that attitude. And
right.
that's just as frustrating, I think.
Do you see any of that come into the store just because it is a romance-centered bookstore? I mean, have you had any blowback about that? Like, oh, it's a romance bookstore.
I don't know. Nothing comes to mind. What about you?
No, I don't think anything comes to mind, but there is a bar next door, and so we have had people walk past, and you could hear them say, oh, that's the sex store, and we'll yell out the window, no, we're not. We're a bookstore.
And even if we were.
Some of the books have sex. It's okay.
No oh, toys like in here.
And yeah. Even if we were, whatever.
Right. Like,
right.
Yes.
Isn't that a good thing? I'm confused.
Yeah, right.
You mean like the set of responses just posted outside so they can, yeah. You don't have to yell anymore.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And usually they've been drinking, so, and probably
yeah,
staring
yeah,
at
makes
our
people
window
a little
for
more
a
brave.
While.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you each have kind of like Romancelandia type favorites, like a favorite trope or favorite author, favorite cover, like between the two of you? I mean, that's always a hard question in romance because, like, if you ask me what my favorite romance is, I'm like, I don't know. I have 13.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's so hard. I think right now I'm on a much more contemporary kick just because it's kind of grounding me. Mm-hmm. Even though we're not talking about what's going on in the pandemic, it's about what's going on now. You know, the whole texting in books and, you know, Twitter and all that stuff. So for me, that's kind of grounding as what I want my world to be like again when this is
kind
over.
It gives you a false, almost like a false normalcy, it sounds like.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's really interesting. I hadn't thought about it that way, but that's really true. Like it feels mm-hmm. like it should feel like instead of
right.
what it does feel like,
yeah.
Which is all terrible.
Crazy.
See, and I don't know, I've been unfortunately like mostly unable to read the past like week and a half. I don't know, like I pick up a book that I was really excited about and I like look at the first page and I'm like, I'm just not in the right place for this. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping to kind of find something to break it. Like I was talking to a friend and Danielle, dresser who does a lot of our moderating, especially, and she has one of our book clubs. I don't know what I need. And she was like, well, maybe something just fluffy. Maybe you just need like fluffy, sweet, calm, low angst.
Yeah.
And so I'm on the hunt for something like that.
Right. I hear a lot of people talking about rereading too, where it's like they don't want to. My husband doesn't, I mean, he does understand, but like, I just want to watch Bob's Burgers over and over again, like all of the episodes, because I know it's going to be fine and I know it's going to be happy. And I just, or like rewatch a bunch of movies. And he's much more like, I would like to watch something new. And he's like, could we watch something new? I'm like, no, you can do that on your own time. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just, we have a very different way of like, defeating our anxiety, you know, and so I wonder if that would help, like just going back and reading something that you know you love.
Yeah,
it's hard though because it's such a weird, and I've talked about this with several authors since the pandemic started. It is such a strange thing because from moment to moment I don't actually really know how I feel, which isn't common, you know. So yeah, I mean, I don't know what's going to make me happy in 5 minutes. I know it's making me happy right now, but like, I don't know if like, what, like, what if I get tired of Bob's Burgers? What will life come to?
Yeah.
I don't know.
There's this, I think, like, the past couple of years, there's just always been this sense of like, what's happening? What's going to happen next? What's the other shoe to drop? And now it's almost like every minute there's another shoe dropping. And I think that sense of uncertainty across the board for everyone is just, I mean.
Right. And it's a collective uncertainty.
Yeah. Like, literally something happens every hour. Like, yeah. And it's just, it's so overwhelming. And there's almost no break from it.
Well, it feels like the reactions, and you two can probably speak to this a little bit more than I can, because I pretty much was always a hermit. So I never saw other humans. Other humans, what's that? But what it feels like to me is that there are extremes of reaction. So either people are just reading everything because they just want to escape into that false reality or into a fantasy world, or they can't read at all. Like, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of middle ground in what I see, at least online. Is that something that you two are seeing, just kind of because you maybe tap in a little bit more to some of the local readers?
Well, I think when people do come in, they get giant stacks of books. That's and true. I think that's probably like the people that are coming in. And I have to say, and I know Mom can attest to this, like, all of our customers have come in, and you know, the hand sanitizer's there, they use it, they come in with their masks on, and it's been great to feel so supported in that scenario. Yeah. Like, the people that come in, they're just as concerned and everything. But yeah, when they come, like, big stacks, like so I feel like the people that are coming in are those been like marathon readers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's so true, too.
Let's talk a little bit about the store. How did the idea of doing a romance bookstore sort of come into your mind?
Do you want me to take this?
Yes, because it was like you kind of put it into words.
Okay. So last summer, I think it was probably May or June, and I know a lot of people have heard this story before, but the lottery, one of them was like almost $1 billion, or it got to be $1 billion. You know, yeah. We always play, everyone does, what if? And so we were just like, well, gosh, if we won it, we would open a romance bookstore, because we were big shoppers at the Rabatas. We followed their story. And they're just the sweetest, sweetest young ladies, girls, sisters. Let's call them sisters. Well, we didn't win, because one person won it, and I'm sure they went into hiding forever and ever. Amen. after about a month, I said to Marissa, you know, you go around once. If you really want to do this, I think we should research it. So we started, and we spent about 6 months researching and getting our ducks in a row, publishing houses, authors. I think you were an author that we actually reached out to.
Yeah. We talked to you guys.
Yeah. And, then we did the Kickstarter, which is all or nothing. And so we got nothing. Mm-hmm. I think I would have changed some things about that in hindsight, but it is what it is. We had some very nice friends and family who helped us. My dad and his girlfriend painted the store just about the whole thing for us. My sisters were there. My son, the other one was in Arizona at the time, my husband, putting together bookshelves, helping us put the books on. I mean, so it was just a joint venture. I think everyone really just stepped up to the plate. And, yeah. We went with a very small budget. Our bookshelves are from IKEA, but they're beautiful. Every month we say, okay, there's the rent. We did it.
So, why the name? I've heard a little bit about this, but I would like to hear more.
Well, and I can talk about that. We were just looking for stuff that had to do with like romance and love.
Yeah.
And I had like Googled love words, and you know,
I bet that
euphemisms
was a lot of porn.
And
so much porn.
Yeah. Well, and then there was like a euphemisms for, you know, lots of things, and Love Sweet Arrow was one of them, and it was listed, of course, under euphemisms for penis. And I was like,
so perfect.
And I just offhand, I was like, maybe I should do Love Sweet Arrow, and I was like, no, let's do something else. Then we kind of came back to it, and we're like, I don't know, it's kind of fun, and it could be a reference to something PG, and it's also referenced to something rated R, you know?
Right, because I always took it as like sort of like a Cupid thing, and then when I was doing the research, I was like, oh, it's a penis thing, that's even better. I was so, as a person that writes very sexy romance, I was like, I'm much happier now than I was 5 minutes ago. But I mean, the thing is, though, like, that is such a romance thing, though, isn't it? I mean, like, the euphemisms, especially, I think we're a little bit better now than we used to be. But, I mean, those euphemisms in the 80s were sometimes so much, like, so much. I mean, I'm trying to picture using the concept of Love Sweet Arrow as like a euphemism for something. And I can't. Like, it hurts my head. But like, I can't. Yeah. But I love it. I love that like sort of little like sweet little double meaning that, well, now, I mean, you're on a podcast, so it's out there. And you've talked about it before, so it's not like people don't. That's how I found it. But I mean, like, it's so cute that, like, you know, the wink, wink, nudge, nudge to the, you know, the 1980s bodice ripper that, you know, somebody used Love Sweet Arrow as a penis reference.
Yeah. And then right after we decided, I like searched Instagram and Twitter just to make sure. And there were absolutely no reference. Like, I think someone did like hashtag Love Sweet Arrow once. And I was like, okay, we're good.
Yeah, because that is something you have to think about now. I mean, it's the same thing with a pen name or like a title of a book. Like, if, you know, I mean, you have to be careful about that because there is, you know, like, you get confusion and then people get weird about things. And, you know, I mean, it's there's so many. Anytime you can find something that's unique, it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And before we used the name for the bookstore, too, we had to do a search like around the country to make sure nobody else already had the name or copyrighted the name.
Or incorporated it.
Incorporated it. And we actually are incorporated with the name. So, sorry, everyone. We got it.
Sorry, somebody who wanted Love Sweet Arrow as their weird hotel. Ha!
Right.
Some or something. I don't know.
Sybaris is going to rebrand.
So you talked a little bit about the fundraising. And obviously, like you said, I mean, it was an all or nothing kind of thing. And it didn't meet its goal, and so that sort of made you sort of reimagine. But I mean, I know that at the time there was, and I think still is, a lot of Romancelandia kind of support around the idea of more and more of these romance centric bookstores opening up. And I wonder, you know, I mean, I think you two can probably speak more than I can to the, like, the kind of the magic that happens when Romancelandia decides that they like them something that you're doing.
Yes. And we did like start up a Patreon right after the Kickstarter ended. Like, it was about like 2 or 3 days before it was about to end, and I was like, okay, we need to think of, if we're gonna do this, we need to think of something else. And we do have a lot of support that way. I think there was and still is a lot of social media support.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I think like it's just difficult right now to get massive donations, and you know, and I'm sure it's, and anyone considering it right now, it's like even harder,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, someone said to us recently, boy, you picked a good year to start a bookstore.
Yeah,
right? Yeah,
here's something that's kind of hard to do. What, how can I make it harder?
Yeah.
I know,
yes. Let me challenge myself this year.
But both of you seem very adaptable, and I think that that's like such a, I mean, it's like, okay, this isn't going to work. Let's do something else. This, you know, we wanted this. Let's try this. And I mean, I admire that so much about you, just like that it seems like you're very willing to kind of like shift in the water on the fly, because that's the, I mean, the other option is not to do it. And that wasn't the option that you wanted to pursue. So, I mean, that is that something that you're always kind of talking about, is like strategizing and adapting to these very weird times?
Oh, I think so. Don't you, Marissa? And then it seems like, as Marissa was talking earlier about how things are thrown at you every day, like 5 or 6 things come up, and we just, I'll text her or she'll text me. All right, who's going to handle this? And then we laughed too, because last year both of us worked full time until this pandemic started.
Yeah.
And I say to her at least weekly, how did we do this when we worked full time? And remember, this is coming up again. How are we going to do this again?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I go to bed like at 10 o'clock and I am out cold. So.
See, and I go to bed at midnight and I wake up at 6 and I sleep fitfully. So.
Very different strengths there.
Yes.
But that's well, and neither one of you had. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that's the best thing about having a partner is that we do kind of split and divide things. We both have our strengths and weaknesses, and we know that about each other. So it's nice. It's nice. Nice to have someone to talk to about it. She texts me a lot about 12 o'clock at night, and usually I'll read it and go back to sleep because I'm like, I can't deal with this now.
You need to process in your sleep.
Yes. And usually when I'm up about 2:30, 3 o'clock for an hour, all those thoughts are going through my head of things that, okay, this is what I have to accomplish tomorrow. So it's pretty much 24/7, honestly.
Yeah.
I would think that there's an advantage too in that, and I assume the Ripped Bodice probably has the same advantage in that, because your family members, you know, your mother-daughter team, their sister team, that there is something to be said that you really do know each other that well because you've known each other, at least for Marissa's entire life.
Yeah.
and so, you know, you kind of can see like, well, this is something that maybe I could handle with a little, it's less stressful for me. This is something that she's better at, like that you can really have almost like your finger on the pulse of exactly what you're both good at, each good at individually, what you're both good at the same time, and what both of you are not as great at and have to play like what, rock, paper, scissors for.
Sometimes that happens. That's true.
Yeah.
So neither one of you had experience doing something like this before either, though, did you, before you launched?
No. Not really. I mean, you had those like a small business with dad when I was a toddler, but yeah. I mean, my background, I have a undergraduate degree in music, a master's degree in education. I had a page on a website, like my teacher page that I never updated. So
yeah.
This is very different.
So it's a lot of the adaptation just, I mean, take out all of the whatever is going on now. but also, like, I mean, you had this first year of really learning on the fly in every sense of the word.
In every sense of the word. I think no matter how prepared we thought we were, I think there was so much we didn't know. Don't you think, Marissa?
Yeah. I mean, you could read everything, but it's still like, until it's staring at you in the face.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you don't really know what you're doing until it happens.
Mm-hmm. And people have been very patient with us. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
No. Well, that is the nice thing though. Romancelandia does tend to be pretty nice. So if mm-hmm. you're like, I'm sorry, we're just learning. They're like, okay, I support that in general. Sometimes they're also terrible, but I mean, it's nice to hear that they have been hopefully generally nice.
Yes.
I think so. I don't think we've had anybody get really, really frustrated or mad. I think that since we've done a lot of stuff online, I think my biggest thing that I've apologized for probably 4 or 5 times, and I really still feel bad, but it's been hundreds of orders. I get the last 2 digits wrong of their transaction number, and then they'll be like, it says it's in California and I live in Florida. And I'm like, let me check. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. I gave you the last 2 wrong digits. But I'll have a sheet, I'm not kidding, of like 30 things that I've taken to the post office. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. So I apologize right off the bat for that. If I have messed up your numbers, it's on me.
Well, and we've gone, like, we're still probably doing 80% online orders. So, yeah. Like, that's the majority of what we're doing right now. So, like, Mom just said, like, it'll be, like, 2 feet long of tracking numbers.
Yeah.
And it's really easy to just, whoop, the one below it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, your eye just goes to the next line and thinks that it's a straight line. And there you are.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you've learned anything about each other? I mean, because you do know each other so well, I mean, is there something that you feel like you've really learned about your mom or you've learned about Marissa?
You go.
Well, and this is very smart of her. Mom is a list maker. Mm-hmm. And I wish I could be one, but I hold everything in my head, and then it just something always falls, and I'm like, I really need to be like her and make lists, but I only do it if, like, basically she tells me to do it.
The forced march to list making. Yeah.
Make a list right now. Okay.
And I'll even say to her, because I said to her this morning when I was driving in, she called, she's like, all right, I'm here, what do you want me to do? And I'm like, first off, get a piece of paper and a pen, because as we talk about this stuff, I need to check it off.
And I didn't do it. I didn't do it.
And I feel like there's a couple things we forgot to do. So I'm going to be heading back to the bookstore today, I think. Even though
because you have a list that you can check stuff off on.
And I have a mental list of a website and things to do.
Yeah, she's our social media person. She puts out, she keeps track of everything. I do Facebook, but she does the rest. Well, our first webpage, like our introduction one, my husband is really good about keeping up. And then Marissa does the Indie Light one. That's for all the books that we don't have that you want to order. And I do Facebook, and I've learned how to put an image on the side of my computer on the screen and drop it. I'm so proud of myself because I'm such not a computer person. I can drop and drag things now. Woohoo! Which is why she does social media.
You're like, I dropped and dragged things. You're like, I organized 13 events on Facebook, you know, on Twitter. And you're like, oh, good. I feel good about myself, though. That's how I am, though. My husband is very analytical, and like, I don't want to do a spreadsheet, like, I want to die, and he'll like pull out some like 14 page spreadsheet, you know, he's like, well, let's analyze this data. I'm like, let's not, though. So I mean, there is something nice about someone having some opposite strengths from you but the same goals as you have, so that you can like fill in those gaps for each other, as long as you don't want to kill each other because someone brings out a spreadsheet again. Other than that, you know, it's great. But I do think you don't really know that about each other the same way until you are into a situation like you are now, where you're like, this is your business that both of you care deeply about and want to succeed. And it's like, how do you, you know, how are each of you managing that on a different level? And I think that that's always kind of interesting when you learn that about someone you know so well.
Yeah. And I think the pandemic has taken it to a new level.
Yeah.
Marissa and I don't argue, but sometimes when we're both on edge, we're not listening to each other. And so the other day I texted her, it was like 9 o'clock at night, and I said, we did it. And she's like, what? I said, we didn't have any misunderstandings today for the whole day. We listened and we understood what each other said. So
celebrate.
And, well, and I think, every day we're just like, it's the pandemic. We know it's the pandemic. We're both on edge. And so we really have been trying to just listen, don't assume what each other's saying. Make sure we understand it. So,
well, and I'm just a person that, you know, like when I was in grad school for education, they talked about, you know, like neurodiversity and like one person threshold for certain things, and then when all these other things are impacting it, where that threshold changes. Mm-hmm. And for me, I think like my threshold for not bursting into tears is like very low. Like, I hit it like all the time.
Me too.
And I'm like, and so I like it just takes like one thing where we don't get the books in on time, and I'm like, we're never gonna, like, ah,
this is so hard.
And then I'm like, no tears come out, but I'm just like sobbing. And then like my dogs run away from me, and I'm like, I'm so sorry.
And then my fine line is mother or partner. Sometimes I'm like,
right,
fuck
that's
up.
True. Right.
It's going to be fine.
Yeah. Yes. Because there's such a different way that you would probably react to something as a mom than you need to react to something as a partner. Sometimes those two things are opposites in some ways. And I would imagine that is a difficult line to manage.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Like, do I comfort you or slap you? Comfort or slap? Comfort or slap?
Sometimes that's what it is. I'll be like, listen.
Pull it together, woman.
Like, breathe.
Love you so much. Love you so much.
Breathe, breathe, breathe.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And I mean, again, I mean, my husband works for me, and I mean, you guys have talked to him, and he's great, but I'm sure that there are times when he's like, today I'm going to be speaking to you as your business partner.
Yeah.
You're being crazy right now. Yeah. And I love you so much. Yeah. Right. But I mean, that is the disadvantage to working together when you are that close, is that it's like, okay, I got to figure out what hat I'm wearing right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I send her a lot of heart emojis or little smiley face kisses.
You soften it with the heart emojis.
So she does this
together,
thing.
Woman, heart, heart, heart.
She'll do this thing where she's like, I told you that, smiley face. And then I'll just be like, angry face back.
I do not accept your smiley face.
That's right. I'm sending
it's funny
you
how the emoticons have become like how we like try to solve, like, it's like that's our, like, because you can't, when you are texting back and forth, it is very, you can't see someone's face, you can't hear their tone of voice, you can't, like, there is no sarcasm emoji, you know, so
yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
being able to be like, but I love you, like, heart, 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 it is helpful. It's funny how we've all sort of developed that secondary language of like, okay, you're telling me that you say I'm an asshole, but you mean it with love.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yes. That's exactly how it is.
Well, and you just celebrated your first year in business, which is amazing. Congratulations on that. I know you did sort of some big celebrations online, mostly because, you know, the world is hell.
Yes.
So were you able to really fully embrace that and kind of celebrate how exciting that is?
I hope so.
It was hard.
Real that it's been a year, do you think, Marissa?
Yeah, and I think it was hard too because we weren't like celebrating. We had this big thing planned. We were hoping to have like a party and have people show up. And at that point, no one could even come in the store because, I mean, technically, I think it had opened up, but we weren't ready. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully next year we can kind of do like a big 1 year, 2 year thing.
Oh, it's going to be huge. That's all I can tell you. It's going to be huge.
I'm excited. Please invite me.
And you can't come in unless you've been vaccinated.
Right. Well, wait, that's it. You give vaccines at the door.
Look at, vaccine party. I have a party. Son who's a doctor. We could do this.
He just has an insurance card. Oh, my God. We're brainstorming. It's good.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it has really, I mean, we can't have this conversation without talking a little bit about how COVID has impacted, because it is so different now. And I mean, I know that leading up to this, you know, you were doing a lot of in-person like author events, and I know that that drove a lot of business. It sounded like, just based on kind of what I was reading, that, you know, it's like you get 20 people in the store to see someone, and then 20 people are like, oh my God, this is amazing, and that helps to drive the business. And so, again, you're like, you're doing this adaptability thing on the fly of saying, okay, that can't happen. Mm-hmm. How can we adjust? Is there a specific way that you feel like that has worked? I mean, you've moved a lot of the business online, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that we've been extremely grateful for is, you know, any author or publicist or publishing house that's reached out about, you know, doing an event, and then like our two big pre-order campaigns that we did, mm-hmm. Like with the Mercenary Librarian one, and then with Alexis Daria, and that's still going on as of right now. It might not be when this posts, but though we're like extra thank you to everyone involved with that, and, you know, including us and helping us and stuff like that helps pay our rent. And so.
Absolutely. Just,
yeah.
Don't stop.
Yeah. Don't stop.
So would you say that that's something that, because obviously, you know, as all of us, you know, as authors are sort of sitting out here out in the universe, also stressing about like literally everything. I mean, I think part of it is that none of us want to see these really special corners that are just for us fail. Because like the big box stores, they don't really, I mean, their bottom line thought process is very different. Like, I don't know that they really care about an individual author doing something. And a lot of the indie stores are not particularly romance friendly. So having these really special places is really nice for us as authors. And we want all of you to please live and succeed. Just as, you know, maybe not just as much as you do, but, as, yeah. you know, on some level, we want that. Is that something, is there something that authors can do, like reaching out to you about doing events and that sort of thing that, that helps?
Stuff like that definitely does help. I think any, pretty much every online event we've done, it's led to sales. So, mm-hmm. And it's led to sales for the author, it's led to sales for the publisher or the self-published. So anytime you know, they, and I'm sure the Rip Bodice would agree, like reaching out to us, it may take us a few days to get back to you, depending on, especially once we go back to work, but just reaching out to us about stuff like that is, and we can get the ball rolling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does it help when an author kind of has a concept in mind, or is that something that you like sort of working out with them, you know, so that you can, because you know what your needs are a little bit differently or what your audience is a little bit differently?
We're thrilled if you have something in mind and you have your ideas. We're like, let's go. Yeah. We're here for you. Sometimes authors will contact us or the publicist and say, so and so wants to do this. What do you think? What would you like them to do? And we'll work in tandem with them. Mm-hmm. But we love it when you have something in mind. It just makes our life a little easier because we're still getting, for the most part, we're still doing all of the flyers or Canva, whatever you want to call it. Sometimes the publishing houses will handle that for us as well, and we're always thankful for that because it's so hard to be creative on the spot.
Yeah.
And
especially since then you're being creative and you're trying to be creative within your own brand and someone else's brand. And that, I mean, like any work that you can do from our side or from a publicist side is probably helpful.
We never say no.
Right.
And honestly, like once I go back to work, especially like as a teacher, like I don't know what the year is going to look like. And things could get very, very busy. So definitely the summer was easier and I had more time to work on things. So
I think our goal would be, at least my goal, Marissa, on my list would be
the list, Marissa.
I think we should, our goal is to have 3 to 4 virtual events a month. I think that's a good goal.
Yeah.
We would love to do some book clubs again. We haven't gotten there yet, but virtual book clubs I think would be fun. So we're still feeling out our people. So
I think the big thing with the book clubs is just kind of as cases continue to rise in Illinois, we're more apprehensive about having something in person because
we
there is a place down the a block or so away, but people are always walking past. We could technically do it in the store, but then we'd have to limit the amount of people, and it gets kind of convoluted when it comes.
It's always a math problem.
Yeah,
yeah.
So,
but it does seem like people are adjusting to the concept of like, okay, but like let's just do it on Zoom or let you know. I mean, like people are very open to, hey, we get it.
Yeah.
You know, how do we adjust for you and adjust for ourselves for safety? I mean, I think the people that care about the safety and care about other people's safety seem to be very willing to adjust on the fly and still really enjoy themselves with those offerings that you guys or Ripped Bodice or other you know, individual authors or whatever are making.
Yeah.
That's true. I mean,
people have been very, very receptive. And I think every event we do, we get more people because, like, I'm doing a better job of publicizing it and getting in contact with the right people who also then promote it as well. So, yeah.
Well, that's good. I mean, I think it's a good thing for authors to sort of, like, have in their back of mind of, like, hey, this is another place where maybe I can reach out and everybody kind of helps everybody. And it's the kind of, like, you scratch my back, I scratch yours. Everybody, I mean, in the end, we all want to win in this situation. Like, everybody wants to benefit. I mean, I when we do stuff together, I want you to benefit. I want me to benefit, or else, like, I would just not involve someone else if I didn't care if they benefited.
Yeah.
But that's just, you know, maybe my weird mindset. Like, everyone should win. But I think it's a good thing for authors to kind of be aware that they have that option to reach out to you, or to ask their publicist if they work with a larger publishing company to reach out to you and, like, have that option available.
Yeah.
We're learning a lot of publicists too.
Yes, I'm sure.
Yeah, we've worked with three or four a few times. So, you know, if we don't know you, you should reach out.
Yeah, publicists, please reach out.
Yes.
But it's always a funny thing. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you probably have a different experience, because what you do, like, they understand what a bookseller does. But I'm like, I got a lot of publicists that reach out to me, and they're like, well, we really think that you could review this book on your podcast. And I'm like, literally, you've clearly never listened to my podcast, because that's not what I do. But
yeah,
thank you. Yeah, thanks though. So if you want the books, you should email these guys, not me.
Right. Well, Powers. I think it's not that you're... recently we just got like a non-romance, like, religious book sent to us. And they're like,
how to order it. And then someone sent us where they paid for books through Barnes & Noble for us to sell their book. And I'm looking at this box going, what am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah, what is this?
So
that's very weird.
I mean, I feel bad that you paid for these 10 books and you want me to sell them, but I'm a romance bookstore. And I have no information on how to contact you. So, okay, so they just went in the back room because...
Well,
so
and
if
then
you're
they
out
probably
there and you sent us those books, call me and you can have them back.
Well, and I feel bad too, because they like legit bought them from an actual bookstore,
right?
And so they like lost money on this,
right?
And so it's,
and again, I mean, I think maybe that's a good reminder, you know, as authors, like, hey, reach out and like have a conversation before you just you know, randomly do something.
Yeah.
So because then you two can discuss whether that makes sense, whether you want to do it differently, because obviously there may have been a different way for you to access those books where they wouldn't have lost money.
Yes.
You would have had a better setup. I mean, so just maybe that's the lesson here that we can share, is like, definitely reach out, but don't assume that something's going to work, even if you've done it with a different bookstore, because your bookstore may be different with,
yes,
like, what you want and what you can and will do.
Yes.
True. That's true.
So you talked a little bit about your Patreon a little bit earlier. What would you want people to know so that they could jump on there and kind of know what kind of cool stuff they're going to get on the Patreon? What was the, what's your mindset with Patreon?
Well, I'm currently working on some new features, but a lot of what because I do the majority of the Patreon stuff.
Again, social media.
Yeah, social media. We have several different levels, but if you just want to see like the majority of what we do at the basic level, it only costs $1 a month. So, and a lot of what I do, I try to make sure that as much as I can, making it accessible to as the most amount of people as possible.
Right.
And then with I have to do another accounting of how many signed books we have, because we do at the $10 level, you can pick a signed book and then we'll just send it to you. So that's kind of exciting. And then we have our $25 level with the everything, and then you get, you know, a shelf plaque. So you get to sponsor a shelf. And then I started doing, at the $1 level, it's like a book recommendation, like a romance recommendation, or just a book recommendation every other month. But if you're at the $5 level, you get one every month. So, and most of the time it's romance. It's not always, but just because I read a non-romance book that was really cool, and I was like, everyone needs to buy this book.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you know, who would know better? So. Well, thank you guys again so much for doing this. I don't know what you want to share with them as far as like social media or ways that they can follow you or find you or buy from your store. If there's something specific you want to tell people, if they're like, oh, I would like to get involved in this love Sweet Arrow thing.
Well, I believe on our Twitter, we do have a link to our Patreon. And then on our Instagram, we have a link to all of our upcoming virtual events.
Excellent. So check and out on our socials.
Yes. All of our, on our webpage, we have in the next couple of days, some stuff coming up for Bookstore Romance Day will be on there. And then I'll be able to drag and drop it onto Facebook.
The drag and drop is going to happen, people.
It's going to happen. But we are still doing our surprise boxes at $20 or $50 levels. Yes. Actually, Marissa curated one today. It's in my trunk, which is why I have to go out again to take to the post office. We still have shirts. We have our own candle that Novelty Years made for us.
Yes.
And we have totes.
And the candle can be purchased online. You do not have to come to the store for that specific candle. So, and it has a sweet scent.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys again so much. This was so fun to get to talk to you since I haven't talked to you in a while.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
This has been Journeys of Romance. I'm Jess Michaels, your host. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again next time.